From Studio 22, you're listening to Servcast with your hosts William Lamb and Tyler Shores. Servcast is dedicated to challenging those who have a desire to serve, lead, and make the world a better place through the love of Jesus Christ. And now, here's William and Tyler.
Welcome back to Servcast. My name's Tyler, and I'm here with my friend and your host, William Lamb.
Hey, Tyler.
Hey, Dr. Lamb. So we've been in the podcast game now. I mean, we're up over 20 episodes.
I think so.
So I mean, I don't know that constitutes us as experts, but I was thinking the other day about how we got this thing started, and it just kind of grew from like I was like, hey, William, I listened to this podcast. You should check it out. And you're like, oh, man, there's this podcast thing. Let's listen to all the podcasts. And then it was like, oh, hey, Tyler, you know what? We could do that. And next thing I know, there's a mic sitting on the table and you're recording us. But all that to say, why do you listen to podcasts? I know why I listen to podcasts. No one cares why I listen to podcasts. The question is, Dr. Lamb, why do you listen to podcasts?
Tyler, I can answer that question for you. You ready?
I'm ready. Lay it on me.
Honestly, I think the reason is because I want to be better informed to navigate the terrain of life. And there are a lot of things, a lot of topics, a lot of situations, circumstances that I really just don't know enough about. And podcasts is an easy way for me to be able to increase my knowledge, gain a better vocabulary of sorts. You know, I run a lot. I train for marathons. And so a lot of times when I'm running, I'll listen to podcasts, and it's just a unique way for me to be able to gain very valuable information that otherwise might get lost in the shuffle of a bunch of other events. There's times you can walk in my office and you'll be able to know that I'm listening to a podcast while I'm sitting here working. I have the ability to multitask in that regard. But for me, it's just gaining information from trusted people, and I hope that those folks who listen to us are learning to trust the voices that we bring to the table.
I mean, we certainly trust the ones that are here. But I mean, I love it because, I mean, you know, you can do it while you're working. If it's not anything that you mentally need to engage in, you can do it while you're driving, which is something you better mentally engage in. But it's just a lot of different ways that you could really just take it in.
So. And Servcast is designed, like today's show, is going to be, 30, 40 minutes or so for a particular topic that we're going to unpack with some detail. But we also have other aspects of that, which, much shorter. I think you guys designed it as William Gone Rogue, where I just kind of do my own thing of sorts to talk about a particular topic or event or tell a story. And so on our Servcast, label, you're also going to find some of those ideas. And we're also beginning these follow up with some of our chapel speakers that are coming up. And, so in the days ahead, you'll begin to hear more of those abbreviated versions of a regular podcast. And so we think we're building an appetite for about anybody who wants to listen to our podcast.
And if nothing else, we're having fun.
I am.
So the question is then, what kind of podcast do you listen to?
Who do I listen to?
Or who, if you're willing to give an on-air endorsement, then I'm go for it. But you can just leave it with
Gabe Lyons, Q Talks. I listen to those guys a
lot.
Yeah, it's good stuff. There's a. I'm not even a techie guy, man. Jonathan Cottrell, who works for. Oh goodness!
Whiteboard.
Whiteboard. I know these guys. They're my friends, And he calls himself. What is his podcast? It's something with T. You know what the name of that is?
Is it the Developer T?
The Developer T. That's him. Yeah. Again, I'm not a tech guy, but I like listening to the practical concepts that Jonathan pitches out there. Of course, he was a student of mine when he was at Lee, so anytime I can listen to people like that. There's a couple of others that I've started to pick up. There's some leadership podcasts that I listen to from time to time. I'm listening to some that I don't agree with. There's a couple that I didn't agree with so much that I quit listening to it. But then there's some that I don't agree with that I'm, court still out. I'm giving them some space to bring a different perspective. And I think, again, that's what's valuable about taking time in podcasts is you're getting different perspectives.
I like listening to, there's some history ones that I listen to, kind of some like life hack ones. There's one in particular that I like. that recently came out that I'm going to plug it here because it fits so perfectly what we're going to talk about today. It's by a guy named Shane Blackshear, and it's a new one he's doing. And there's another person with him. I need to figure out who that name is, but it's called OnRamp. But I found out about this because I listened to Shane's other podcast. Mm-hmm. But OnRamp is specifically conversations that he and his associate are having about race and racism and ways that we can kind of broach that topic, which, again, like fits so well with what we're going to talk about today, because there was an event on Lee's campus not too long ago called the Tunnel of Oppression that was put on by some students and some staff, had some faculty involvement, and they deal with different topics, different isms like racism, sexism that people are going through, and try to kind of build like an experiential thing for our students to just be more aware of what's going on there.
Exactly, and you know our guests are coming up in just a minute, but before we go to those, man, I've got to mention one more. Our coach.
Oh, yeah.
Rob Alderman.
He's got a new one. Have you heard his new one?
I'm looking at it right here. It's $5 film.
So good.
And he actually had a guest on there recently, Dwayne Hamby, which you want to pick up those two. So if you're just looking for something to listen to, in addition to Surfcast, you want
always,
to start picking up those. But
yeah.
I think we should get to our guests that are coming today. Who's in the studio
Absolutely.
With us?
Absolutely. We have Ben Jones and Kelsey Baker, and they're area coordinators with Residential Life and Housing here at Lee University. And they were part of a broader team that put on this event, and we're going to have them coming up next.
So tune in, listen, and I think you'll enjoy it.
Back with Servcast. William, we have guests with us in the studio, right?
We do. Kelsey Baker and Ben Jones. Welcome, guys. We're glad you're here.
Thank you for having us.
So we're talking about this thing called Tunnel of Oppression, and the two of you were involved in that process and leading up to that and kind of the whole journey with Tunnel of Oppression here at Lee University. So tell us a little bit about it, Ben. You know, what you're doing here at Lee, what your role is, and why you're involved in this activity we call Tunnel of Oppression.
Yeah, so my role here, I'm an area coordinator, so I work in our residential life and housing office, and I help to oversee a team of resident directors and work with their student staff and just sort of help them in their work and then also do some projects for the department. And so one of those projects for me is to be involved with Tunnel of Oppression each year. And so, yeah, it's been the fourth year that we've done the event as a department and the third year that I've sort of been directly involved with helping.
Now, Kelsey, you were part of the original think tank or the group or the dorm that launched this idea. Is that right?
That's right. So it was myself and three other resident directors at the time, the resident director of Nora Simmons, Medlin, Atkins Ellis, and myself. I was the resident director of Crosstharp at the time. We wanted to come together and create a meaningful experience for our students, something educational, but something that would be impacting in a deeper way. So one of the resident directors on my team had actually experienced a similar event at another institution and thought that it could translate really well to our students, and so we decided to give it a shot.
So what's the real purpose or the mission behind this idea of Tunnel of Oppression?
Okay, so the main mission and purpose behind Tunnel of Oppression is essentially to generate compassion and awareness among our students and to show them how to advocate effectively for people in our culture that might be considered the least of these or marginalized in some way. So the heart behind the event is to raise awareness and show maybe some injustices that are happening around us, and then to help our students respond to that from a place of faith and from a place of advocacy. And so this year specifically, we were working from a Stephen Garber quote from his book Visions of Vocation, where he talks about being implicated in the way the world turns out, and knowing what we know about the world, how do we choose to love it, and how do we choose to see ourselves as directly implicated as Christians for our neighbors and how and what happens to them.
So we'll dig a little deeper in just a minute about the whole idea of this thing, but what does this Tunnel of Oppression look like? Is this over a weekend, over a couple of days? What does this event look like? We know it's not event-based. We know there's a lot of intention behind this to raise awareness for the oppressed and how we should respond to them, and we'll unpack that in a few minutes. But, Ben, tell us what this event looks like.
Yeah, so the event takes place on campus on a Friday night. Our RA and RC, like our student leader teams, with help from SLC as well, do a lot of work to prepare for the event in advance. When our RAs and RCs are back in the early spring, they start talking through these topics. And so everything that you see that night is student-generated and student-led. So it's not something that's being pushed by the staff or by the university, but it's students talking about things that they're passionate about, things that they want to raise awareness in. In terms of the structure of the actual event, it happens over two rounds, so we can accommodate a bigger group of students. But students will come, and they'll be paired off into groups that we kind of randomize as they come in. And each of those groups is assigned to a faculty member or a staff member from the university so that they can travel from room to room with that staff member. And then at the end of the experience, they're able to spend some extended time with that staff member, who then leads them through a sort of debrief process where they can talk about their initial thoughts and reactions to the event and sort of ask some of those questions that Kelsey referred to earlier of, how does my faith inform this? Knowing what I know about this now, what are my next steps? What do I need to do moving forward? And so they travel through those six rooms, and each of those rooms is designed with some kind of educational aspect. It may be presenting information, and it's done in a number of creative ways. And so some of the rooms will have vignettes where you see examples of racism being played out. Some will have statistics on the wall that kind of point to what it's like to live in a way that's socioeconomically unbalanced. And so it's kind of up to our students in terms of how the rooms get executed. But they're each designed as an experiential.
What were the isms or the topics that you guys addressed this year?
Yeah, so they cycle in and out every year, so we covered different things. This year we looked at racism, sexism, classism, heterosexism, mental health stigma, and
we actually had a sixth room that wasn't an ism. It was focused on the idea of hope and advocacy in response to the other isms we covered.
Okay.
Which is the first year that we've included that.
Okay. Now, Tyler, I understand you were able to go to this particular event.
Yeah.
Kind of as a participant, observer. Mm-hmm. What did it look like from your vantage point?
I think this was my second year attending, and I just kind of trailed one of the student groups. And I think, like, what's really cool about what you guys do is with all the input that you get from the RAs and the RCs and the students, like, it's really kind of like a peer-to-peer education event. So, like, it's not just a professor, even though the faculty and the staff are involved to kind of help debrief, like you said, Ian, but like really the students, like teaching their peers, like kind of trying to open their eyes to these different issues. I really enjoyed the event. Like some of the rooms were just very like heavy and weighty, and the different stories that were told with each kind of put a personal touch on some of these like broad ideas. Like you hear everyone talking about race issues today in our country, but I guess when you put that like personal story on it, that brings a weight to it. It's not there. So I think that, I mean, you were very effective in that. And I really, you said that you guys added the hope room, and that was a great addition. Like just kind of the chance to have, like dealing with all these difficult topics, having that chance to kind of have an uplifting moment or like, hey, here's a good way to get involved or to deal with these things. So
can you take us maybe, with some word pictures here, walk us through one of the rooms. What does one of those particular rooms look like if you're a participant and you're walking through that door? What are you going to see? What are you going to sense? What are you going to feel?
Okay, one of the rooms that I found really profound this year was our room accentuating racism in modern day culture. And so when you walk into the room, there were different sets of characters or actors set up around the room. And behind each of those actors, there was statistics or additional information about their scene behind them. So the room was a little bit darker. I think a lot of the teams try to create an atmosphere that matches the heaviness that Tyler was talking about.
Okay.
And so students were led into the middle of the room, and one by one, these different scenes that were around the room came to life. So one scene showed how a student might respond to a friend talking about dating someone of a different ethnicity. And then another actress talked about an experience with her sister who physically looks very different from her, and how she's been treated in different social settings. It, went to another scene that talked about how people might be treated disparagingly in when it comes to the TSA or the police or different authorities because of their race or ethnicity. And one that was really powerful was a scene of a cashier and a couple of people in line, and the woman behind a man of color in line just shouting very negative, almost berating things at him because she was impatient that he mm-hmm. was in front of her in line. And then he turned to the audience and said, "No one is saying anything. You aren't saying anything." So that was very challenging to those of us who were congregated around the room watching this, thinking, would I say something if mm-hmm. that was happening to a person of color around me? And so at the end, to show that these vignettes weren't extreme versions of the truth or weren't dramatized versions of what happened, they showed a montage of video clips from shot from maybe people's cell phones or the news that kind of brought these situations to life even more and showed them happening in real time around the country to show that these things really are happening. And then after that, there was just kind of a little bit of a silence that settled over the room, and the experience kind of closed out after that. We were kind of left to wrestle with, wow, what does this mean for me, and would I say something if I were in one of these situations?
So do all the students experience every particular room?
Yeah, the students go through on like an 8-minute rotation, and so they have a chance to see all 6 rooms before the night's over.
Well, I can understand now, Tyler, why you were glad they added the Hope Room, man. This is heavy. Yeah. This is heavy. So.
Yeah, and even like when you're passing down the hallway and stuff, like they have like quotes from people like up on the wall, like Martin Luther King Jr. quotes, or I think I saw an Elie Wiesel quote this year. And so, I mean, really just the whole presentation, like you call it the Tunnel of Oppression because, I mean, when you're in it, like everything you see is a part of it and getting you to think kind of outside yourself to that. So at least that's the effect that it had on me.
I'm wondering, as I'm sitting here listening to you talk, and you know, maybe it's an unfair question, but how do you pick and choose which one of these you're going to deal with? I mean, does current trends in our society affect that? You know, is there a biblical influence behind that? And I know you said that students get to do it, but surely you give them some particular kind of guidance, or you vet some of these ideas before you expose them to the general population. How do you come about that decision?
Yeah, so the way that we sort of approach the planning for the event, there are some that have been part of the event since its first year and have remained a part of the event. Things that a student would go to any news site and see a headline connected to. Things that are still really preeminent in culture and conversations we just know students are having that we want to keep in the event. The others we sort of brainstorm with the resident director team based on their interactions and encounters with students and their knowledge of sort of what students are talking about and wrestling with, and then try to pare it down to ones that we think are the biggest need in that particular season, knowing that we can't cover everything, and if we tried to, we wouldn't be able to do them well. And then after that, we sort of let our Ds pick what they think their teams would be most interested in, so there's some personal passion and investment in the topic. And they take it from there. And we just, at that point, work with them to make sure the rooms are coming together and try to make sure the topics are addressed sort of comprehensively and respectfully in a way that can bring that sense of education without creating any kind of condemnation or any kind of, like, we don't want to be edgy just to be edgy. We always want it to kind of be aimed at something. And so that's something that we're passionate about as we plan the event.
I always like to call Tyler our Servcast resident theologian. He likes to call himself the aspiring theologian. But so we'll ask our theologian now for a little bit of a biblical, you know, a biblical concept behind this whole idea of caring for the oppressed, and you know, why are we supposed to be doing this?
Is that a question directed at me right now?
I think so.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I wasn't sure if you were asking it now or if you're like, oh, we'll
no.
talk about that later.
No, I think I want to hear you talk about it.
Okay, on the spot. I mean, I think it starts in Genesis. Mm-hmm. So we talk about how man and woman, male and female, were created in the image of God. And that means something. And I think if we look, without thinking of any specific texts offhand, at the overall arc of Scripture, like, it moves towards human flourishing. And I think when we talk about these isms that they're addressing, that they come into conflict with what is human flourishing. And I would just say the connection to the Bible then is human flourishing is God's intention for creation. So, I mean, certainly you can find instances throughout the Scripture where it talks about how, whether in the law of God or in the Gospels, like, ways that the faith is coming against the various ways that people are oppressed. But in the overall arc, I think God is moving us towards human flourishing, and anything that comes against that is contrary to God. And certainly, I mean, racism, sexism, classism, these isms are that. So.
Mm-hmm. And the reason I put you on the spot, Tyler, because every once in a while I like to do that, you know. But
thanks.
Another reason behind that is because sometimes I'm concerned that students who might not have, or people in general who might not have the level of education that, you know, could be given to them or, you know, could be provided to them, they might not really understand how valuable and important a responsibility for us as believers is to address this issue.
Yeah.
Thoughts on that?
Yeah, we use, Kelsey mentioned the quote from Stephen Garber earlier. We also use the scripture to frame the event. So we frame the event for the students with Isaiah 1:17, learn to do right, seek justice, defend the oppressed, take up the cause of the fatherless, plead the case of the widow. So we use that at the start of the event to sort of set up this framework for students to ask, where am I doing these things? Where am I not doing these things? So that they can use that as a platform for either continued passion in what they're doing or to make a change and start taking those things more seriously.
So maybe the bigger question is the second part of that. You know, where am I not doing this? Because to basically, you know, remain, you know, dormant or inactive is as much of a problem as, you know, not, I guess, right?
Yeah, and I think that goes back to Kelsey's description of the racism room and that kind of haunting question of, like, what are you saying? What are you doing? Why are you not speaking up for me? And so, yeah, that's sort of what we want people to walk away with. Mm-hmm. We're not trying to put a bow on the night. We're not trying to sort of one and done the evening, but want them to walk away with some questions and continue to wrestle with these things.
So if we're wanting them to walk away with maybe creating a little disequilibrium that will bring them to an awareness and a responsibility call, perhaps, of, you know, what can I contribute, how can I contribute, when do I need to contribute to affect change long term in somebody's life? Is that kind of a goal that you guys really are pursuing with this?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's one of the major takeaways. We don't want it to be a fun event for the sake of having an event. We want it to be a continued conversation, and so we hope that they're able to continue that in the residence halls with the faculty that they're with that night. And that's part of the impetus behind giving them a faculty guide as well, is to give them one other person, one other face on campus that they can know, I can go to this person. They're a safe place to talk about these things.
So, all right, we're on a Christian campus. Everybody should be doing this Christian stuff anyway. Maybe they are doing this Christian stuff anyway. So why an event like this to raise awareness at a place where we're already should be aware of the issues around us?
Yeah, so the Hope and Advocacy Room did highlight some great things that our students are already doing and some organizations that are already out there. So we don't want to discount the fact that some of our students have gotten this and they're pursuing this wholeheartedly and they're seeking out areas where they can impact justice and affect their neighbors. So it is definitely something that is happening in pockets, but we've also found that a lot of our students lack some knowledge and awareness of some of these topics, and maybe in some of these grayer areas, for instance, one of the areas we talked about was mental health stigma. Some of our students just aren't aware that they might be responding insensitively to a person who's been affected by mental health in one way or the other. So a lot of it is just education, and a lot of it is based around our university mission statement to prepare our students for responsible Christian living in a complex world. And we know that the world is becoming increasingly complex, and these issues are difficult to talk about, and they're difficult to continue talking about, even though as Christians we feel a responsibility to be responding. Sometimes we're not doing that without that extra accountability and that extra community around us to talk about these things and to propel us forward and spur each other on.
Yeah, I mean, you certainly don't have to go very far, I mean, to find people who are hurting. I mean, they're all around us. I mean, we pass them on the sidewalk. We meet them at the grocery store. I mean, maybe even, like, it's a roommate or someone in really close proximity. But why do you think it might be so easy to overlook what some other people are facing, like, without... Or why might it be so easy to just not lack the consideration, but just to be unaware or, I hate to say oblivious, but just... for whatever reason, just not aware of what other people are going through?
I think it's really easy for people to get distracted. And I don't think there's anything malicious in that. And so I think for our students, you're in college, you're navigating a class load, exploring life away from your parents, worried about social relationships. It's just easy to sort of get consumed with that and turn a blind eye to what's happening around you. And I don't think it's intentional, or students would say, not my problem, not my thing. But easy to sort of say, I will address this when I graduate, when I have more time to make a difference, when I have more money to give, when I have more knowledge to contribute. I think there's a lot of that hesitancy. And so what we really want to do with the event is sort of... if you can think about it with a mental image, it's kind of dropping a rock into that pond of either complacency or just what is sort of the status quo in their life, and hoping that those ripples will make a difference in the way that they're thinking about how they interact with others, and aware that, yeah, I'm busy, there's a lot going on in my life, but there are also areas where I can extend kindness to others, areas where I can advocate for the person sitting next to me. And my voice might be louder than theirs at a certain table that theirs needs to be heard at. So,
let me ask you another question as we come to a close today on our podcast. You mentioned earlier that the whole idea behind Tunnel of Oppression is to be educational but also impacting, to give some action steps. So what are some action steps to follow those ripples? You know, I'm sitting here thinking about the student that is affected by this, but then perhaps sidelined by their own experience. You know, they're affected deeply by the emotion of going through the room. Hope was a great room, but yet now they're back in their lifestyle, they're back in their routine, they're back in their busyness, and they're back in just the part of living that we all face, you know, that there are things around us, and if we don't open our eyes, we don't see them. So what are some action steps that they can take, Kelsey, that would help students to begin to move toward affecting change? I'm sitting here thinking about some of our students could have possibly been exposed to the tunnel of oppression for 3 years now. Mm-hmm. What are some steps that they can take to move this needle forward to see some change that we need here?
Yeah, so I think one simple thing, one of the rooms as it was closing out gave these little cards that had a pair of footprints on the card, and it said walk with someone. And the idea behind Walk With Someone was, regardless of which side of the oppression you may be on, there's someone you can reach out and walk with in that. So I think relationship, even one relationship, is a really good starting point for someone that says, okay, that was a lot of information, there's a lot of brokenness, what do I do now? I think once you've looked inward and figured out where you're at with all of this, reaching out and trying to establish a relationship with even one person who looks a little bit different from you, or whose experience has been a little bit different than your own, I think can keep this at the forefront. Because without a personal connection and without a personal relationship, it's so much easier for these things to fizzle out. So that would be my advice for someone who maybe hasn't found an organization to become a part of, or for someone who just doesn't know quite where to go from here. There are so many organizations and clubs even on our campus to join, but I would say start with a relationship, walk with someone, find someone who's different from you, and pursue them.
So obviously we can't do this by ourselves.
Right.
It's all intended to be on a journey together. Ben, thank you for joining us. Kelsey, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks so much. Is this something we can look forward to next year? Another round two, maybe? Not to be determined.
To be
based
determined.
Based on the look in your, yeah, on your face so. Right now.
I think we're constantly trying to figure out what will be impactful for students with kind of our resources. So it's definitely on the table.
Well, thanks so much for joining us today. And we'll be right back with Servcast to get a student perspective. Back with Servcast. And William, earlier in the episode, I talked about the OnRamp podcast. And just to clarify, that's hosted by Shane Blackshear and right. Carrie Fisher.
Right.
So if you're interested in this kind of stuff, especially conversations on race relations, I highly recommend OnRamp with Carrie Fisher and Shane Blackshear. So
you know, and if people aren't listening to podcasts, hey, check it out once or twice. I mean,
well, they're at least listening to one if they're getting this right now. So
this is true, Tyler.
So you're on the right path. You're listening to this podcast. Just keep going. Listen to our friends that we talked about in the introduction. But we have some guests with us now. We have students Oscar Palin and Alexis Jones joining us to kind of give us a student perspective on this this tunnel of oppression conversation we're having.
Hey, guys. Welcome. How you doing?
Doing good.
Good.
So now, Oscar, tell me what your role is on campus currently, and then Alexis, if you'll follow behind him and share as well, we'd appreciate it.
Yeah. I am the senior resident assistant of Medlin Hall on campus, which is like an all-male freshman dorm. And I'm also a director of Crossover, which is a service club on campus.
Okay. And you're a student, so you actually go to school, too,
I do actually go to school, yes. I am a student as well. In the School of Religion, I'm a theology major.
Okay. Alexis?
I am also a senior resident assistant of Sharp Davis Hall. That is a primarily freshman female dorm. I am also involved with Crossover, kind of a co-route leader for that, and I'm also in the Ladies of Lee. I am their tech coordinator, just participate with them.
See, that makes me want to sing, Tyler, but we'll
please hold. Another time.
We'll hold off on that. All right, let's get to some information that I think would be helpful for our listeners today to get a perspective from students regarding the tunnel of oppression. So both of you are involved in tunnel of oppression. Tell me, you know, from your side of the view, you know, what were you doing and what was your role with that? And then we'll talk a little bit more about what you saw in the process.
I particularly was involved in the racism room. And so the first act that went on, I was an actor in that. And so I played a woman who was extremely racist. And that was pretty difficult to do. But I got to hear a lot of reactions and see a lot of responses. And then the second time I got to go through and just experience it.
Good. Yeah, we heard some earlier remarks about that room. That was an addition this year than normal. No, there was the Hope Room was an addition this year than normal.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
yeah. But we also heard some just amazing responses earlier about this idea of that particular room. It's still an issue, unfortunately, in our world today. And, man, we really want to fix that somehow. So what was your role in this whole process?
Yeah, so I actually had the opportunity to be a part of the Hope Room, which was a new addition to the event. So instead, the event has this reputation of being pretty heavy and kind of overwhelming at times. So Residential Life and Housing thought it would be a good idea to add a room that was a little bit more positive and uplifting so as not to cripple students with the fear of all these issues that are going around on the world and even on our campus and not knowing what to do with it. So what we did in the Hope Room was try to give people an idea of what it meant to move forward from these issues and to do something about them in the Hope Room.
So as participants in the organization and implementation of this event, what was the desire or the hope that you had for people who would participate? What did you want them to leave with?
Yeah, definitely in the Hope Room, we wanted to leave people with practical steps forward, whether that meant getting them involved in like a lot of the service clubs on campus or like organizations in Cleveland or just in the world, even just like pique their interest to chase after what they're passionate about fixing and sending them forth to like do good work in their community and in the world.
I think I personally really wanted to see people left very challenged and not necessarily in a condoning way of, wow, I haven't even thought about these things before, but impacted to move and educate themselves more on things that maybe they hadn't been exposed to before or had stood by or had even said before, and just rewire their way of thinking, expand their worldview, and just be challenged in thinking differently and putting themselves in someone else's shoes and practicing more empathy.
So in addition to the idea of bringing awareness, in addition to the idea of hopefully compelling people to do good, what is another real reason or value or importance behind doing an event like this? I mean, you know, you guys have got plenty of stuff to do on a campus. So why an event like this, and why here at a Christian campus where we should already be bent towards meeting people's needs anyway?
Something that I really carried with me after this event was over the room that I was in, I acted as a racist person, and so I wrote down on my hand the lines that I would say in case I got nervous or forgot. And when the next day came around, those words were still in my hands. They hadn't washed off. And so this left me with this thought of sometimes the things we say or even the things that we stand by and don't say leave a mark for a long time and can leave marks on others. And I think we're all kind of walking around with our own scars, our own stories, and if you had just walked past me, you probably wouldn't have still noticed that I had these words on my hand, but if you took a moment to ask me how I was, see me, get to know me, know my story, you would have seen the words. And so I think there's a lot of power in getting to know someone, where they come from, and how their worldview might be different based on how they were raised or the things they experienced that made them feel treated differently. And there's just such power in getting to know someone for who they are. And I think particularly on a Christian campus, we're called to love our God and to love our neighbors. So learning how to love our neighbors better, especially our neighbors that are different from us, I think is a really powerful thing.
Mm-hmm. And going off of that, I think a lot of people don't think that, like, racism, sexism happens on this campus as often. People ignore the issues because they say we're a campus where Christ is king. And while I do agree with that, I believe that ignoring the issues that are happening on campus right now is inappropriate and does a disservice to those who are oppressed. Last year, I participated in Tunnel of Oppression as well, and we specifically catered the racism room to stories that we gathered from students on campus who had experienced racism. So, and there was like a pretty big response from like the questions that we put out. So it's, the issues still happen on campus. It's not a non-issue here. All these isms that were talked about in Tunnel of Oppression still occur today and even on this campus, whether people believe it or not.
Wow. So I guess if this happens on a regular basis in a place that we call home, in a place that we love, in a place that we're committed to, surely this is happening, you know, in other places around the world. So while we might just be part of a small movement, we're a significant part of a larger movement to raise awareness for people about what's really wrong and what's right and how we should respond to that. So let me ask you another question as we get ready to end our segment today on this particular episode. But what suggestions do you have for our listeners to learn more about particular issues that, like these issues that showed up in the Tunnel of Oppression event, but what are some suggestions to help them to become more aware of particular issues that might be facing them? You know, it seems like sometimes that if it's affecting you and not affecting me, maybe I don't need to know about it. But I really do need to know about it from what you guys are saying with Tunnel of Oppression, right?
Yes.
So how do we become more aware?
We live in a world where the world is more connected than it ever has been. I can pull out my smartphone right now and look up any number of, like, videos, speeches, talks on anything under the sun. So I think just research, get educated. If you do nothing else, get educated on what's actually going on in the world and not just what the media portrays and not just what your friends tell you, because it's likely some like kind of mix of those two, and maybe there's information that those two sources aren't bringing to light. So I would say like research and like get to know this world that we're a part of. It'll help you fight these different isms that people are experiencing. Mm-hmm.
I also would really encourage anyone listening to step out and talk to someone different than you. Something alarming I heard, I can't remember the exact statistic, but the amount of Christians, particularly evangelical Christians, currently that not necessarily don't know where they stand on hot topics and hard issues and isms that we explored during Tunnel. It's not that they don't know where they stand. It's that they don't know how to have conversations with others different than them. Yeah. And that's not loving like Christ did, to not be able to just simply say, you are different than me, and maybe I don't understand a part of where you come from or something about you, but I should still be able to express empathy to you and have a conversation with you.
Yeah, I guess research is a really good way to try to find out some information that we need, especially at a college campus, right? Mm-hmm. One last question for you guys today, and I want you to really speak into the heart and the mind of the listeners. I mean, you guys are very busy. You're committed to a lot of different activities and events, but yeah, you found time to do something of significant value to raise awareness on how we treat and mistreat people in the world. Mm-hmm. So what would you say are some to your listeners to encourage them to get involved in helping other people in need right now?
I mean, we're on a campus where you're required to do service as a part of your degree. And I think getting involved in the service organizations on campus, there are so many good ways to just advocate for people on our campus and in Cleveland. And I think advocacy really just looks like loving your neighbors well, and advocating means working for someone who's oppressed. So you have the opportunity as a student at Lee University to go out into the community and love these people who are living right around you, your neighbors, and be an advocate for them, whether that be helping them have more food, like perhaps they're not getting enough for this physical need, or just being a friend and being like a partner with them.
Okay.
I definitely agree that there are a lot of things you can get involved in, especially on campus, and the isms that we sort of attacked in Tunnel of Oppression, depending on if something struck a chord with you or something you found you're particularly passionate about, or maybe it affects you personally. I think that there are a lot of options and a lot of things that I'm actually proud that Lee is doing right now to talk about these issues that haven't been talked about. And there are different task force and different just service organizations like Crossover, and a lot of meetings in community about different topics like racism. There's the Racial Diversity Council, all of those different conversations just being started. And I would just really encourage anyone who has personally been affected by any of these isms, has personally felt oppressed, to stand up and share and talk about their experiences and seek out others, as well as if you maybe haven't and maybe want to learn more, to step out as well and find opportunities to hear others' voices and, like Oscar said, just be a friend to them.
Great. Guys, thank you for joining us today in Studio 22. And, you know, I appreciate all that you do on campus. And, you know, I'm kind of hoping that whenever you do leave, that you will successfully pass this baton to somebody else. So you guys are departing soon in a, you know, semesters or a year or so. So just be sure to find somebody behind you that can take up your passion and your cause, because that's how we do this thing to affect change for the long haul.
Hey, thanks so much for joining us in this conversation, and then we'll be right back, and then William's going to close this thing out, just bring it all together with a challenge. So stick around. It's going to be good.
Thanks for joining us today on Servcast. As you know from listening to us on a regular basis, I always come back with a challenge, and I use this term, we're made for more. What some amazing comments that came from this discussion today, Ben and Kelsey, and the student perspectives. I don't know, maybe you are sitting there thinking like I was, what would it have been like to have walked through one of those rooms and experienced the difficulty or the challenge, or maybe for some of you, the very raw emotion of your own memory and your own pain, perhaps, and the life in which you've lived. This took me all the way back to an episode that we did early on in the podcast, in the development of Surfcast, one with Mike Hayes, where he talked about justice, and he kind of unpacked that lecture that he did on benevolence. And in that benevolence lecture, Mike gives this quote by Desmond Tutu, and it's very simple. If you're neutral in situations of injustice, you have chosen the side of the oppressor. Okay, that doesn't feel good to me. Neutral sometimes feels better than to begin to actually do something that I have to do or do something that I know that I need to do. I don't know what oppression is going on around you. I don't know what people that you know that have difficulties in their life. Elie Wiesel, phenomenal quote, we must always take sides. Neutrality helps the oppressor, never the victim. Maybe you're a victim today. Maybe you're struggling. Maybe there's difficulty in your mind and your emotions and your memory. Maybe you're the oppressor. Man, I can't believe I actually say that. Maybe you're the one who's causing havoc in someone else's life. I don't know, but this I'm pretty sure of, that there is hope. Kelsey mentioned it. She said there's a room in that sequence of rooms that the students went through that was entitled Hope. We know this hope to be Jesus. So, hey, wherever you are listening to this podcast today, if you need some help, reach out to somebody that can help you. And better yet, if you know somebody else that needs help, why don't you go ahead and act upon the expression that you're made for more. Get along beside them, help them walk the journey, help them make sense of it as much as possible. And most of all, don't let the day close with being neutral. Somebody is depending on you to engage in their life to make it better. Hey, thanks for listening. We hope you join us again soon.
Thank you for listening to Surfcast today. Thanks to our guests who joined us in this conversation, and a huge thanks to all the students, faculty, and staff who put on the Tunnel of Oppression event. Big shout out to Grayson Long for his technical support. If you like what you heard today, be sure to leave feedback on iTunes and Podbean, and if you want to share it on your social media page, you should do that so your friends can also hear what's going on. If you have questions or want to contact us directly, you can do that at surfcast22@gmail.com. Until next time, we'll see you again in Studio 22.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Surfcast. The thoughts and opinions expressed on Surfcast are those of William Lamb, Tyler Shores, their guest, and no one else. Until next time, this is Surfcast, signing off from Studio 22.